On today's episode of Locked Up With History, we'll be looking at the first execution at Geelong Jail that took place behind the walls of the jail. What drove a man to brutally mistreat his wife that ended in the murder of his neighbour's wife? Stay tuned.
Warning. This podcast contains discussions of some potentially distressing topics. Listeners, please be advised. Come with us for true and tall tales unsurpassed, with stories from Victoria's dark colonial past. Spirits, executions, ghosts, murders and ghouls. These are the stories they don't teach you at school. All these twisted tales of mystique and mystery coming to you now on Locked Up With History.
Hello everyone and welcome back to Locked Up With History, episode 10. My name is Deb Robinson and on today's episode we are going to explore the story of James Ross, who would be the first man executed inside the Geelong Jail and the first regional execution following the passing of the Private Executions Bill. It also highlights that domestic violence is not just a modern day problem. But first, let's go back and look at where James Ross came from. He was born in County Limerick in Ireland in 1829 to William Ross and Mary Griffiths. Ross started his life of crime at an early age of just 9 years old when he first broke into a chapel, stealing a bottle of wine and about £4, a substantial amount of money in those days. And it was not the only chapel that he broke into. Ross eventually went into service working as a servant and at first saved up some money, but then lost it all when he went drinking with a fellow servant. Ross decided to go back to stealing and enlisted the help of yet another servant, but when he tried to back out, Ross grabbed him by the throat until he agreed to continue. Ross's fiery temper was obvious from a very young age. The pair would break into some more chapels before Ross left the service. Now, James was next apprenticed to a ship but ran away after a few months. He then was apprenticed to another ship, which he stayed with for about 2 years before stealing the captain's coat and absconding once again. In 1848, Ross enlisted in the 11th Regiment. He wasn't very well liked by his fellow soldiers, and in one altercation he drew his bayonet on another of the soldiers and was only saved from hurting him when the sergeant intervened. Ross threatened to knock the brains out of another soldier. In response, he was mobbed by the group of other soldiers and put into the black hole, a punishment where they were put into a small dark space for a short period of time. It was also rumoured that Ross was wrapped in a rug and beaten with a stick. After this, Ross wanted to leave, perhaps not surprisingly. In 1851, when the regiment was in Adelaide, James Ross deserted the ship. Ross made his way overland to Victoria, where he began working as a shepherd for Mr. Darlot on the Brighton station near Horsham. It was at this time that he started using the name James Ross rather than James Griffiths that he had used previously. Ross had saved about £100 through his work and had thought about sending some back to the chapels that he had robbed in his youth. Ross moved to the Geelong area and was working on a property on the Moorabool River, about 8 miles from town. He would remain in Geelong for about 6 months. While he was here, he met Mary Costin and the pair fell in love. They were married in 1854 at the Christ Church in Geelong and not long afterwards the couple returned to Brighton Station in Horsham. I've often wondered whether Mary saw any red flags in their relationship before they got married. It was soon after they were married that Ross began to mistreat Mary, showing the true colours of the man that he was. He would beat Mary with a stick. He would take pride in stripping his wife naked in the dead of winter and leaving her outside all night. He would pour buckets of cold water over her and then refuse to allow her to get dressed or to get warm. He would put her in the water hole and stand on her head until she almost drowned. It's a wonder that she did not die from any of these treatments of abuse. But despite this, Mary fell pregnant. Ross beat her so hard that he caused her to miscarry the child. Eventually, Mary would become pregnant again, and this time she would carry the baby to term, delivering a baby boy named for his father, James, at the Brighton station in November 1854. But the abuse continued, and by March 1856, Mary had had enough and left seeking protection from Mr. Darlett, as she felt if she didn't, either her or her 15-month-old son would end up dead. And unfortunately, she was right.
If you'd like to visit some of the places featured on Locked Up With History, book in a tour with Twisted History. For the full range of tours and to book, visit twistedhistory.net.au.
The scene of the tragedy was named Brighton Station, owned by an early settler named James Darlett. Darlett arrived in Sydney in 1834 and travelled overland to the Portland Bay area and then Melbourne in 1838. He came to the Horsham area around 1842. Now, Darlett had named the property Brighton after an English seaside town in Sussex for which Mr. Darlett had a fondness. The town that grew at the river crossing was named Horsham by Darlett after a town just north of Brighton in Sussex. In March 1856, the Rosses were living in a hut about 3.5 miles from the home station, with James employed as a shepherd and Mary living with him. At the home station lived Mr. and Mrs. Darlett, with one of the servants being Henrietta Page. Jan, another shepherd, had a hut near the home station, and Thomas and Elizabeth Sayer were employed as a carpenter and laundress, lived in another hut with their 3 children, about 100 yards from the homestead. Elizabeth was a sister to Henrietta. On March 6, 1856, Mary went to the home station to speak to Mr. Darlett about the abuse she was suffering at the hands of her husband. He gave her permission to stay with the Sayers. When Ross came to the main station, Mr. Darlett asked him about the ill treatments his wife was suffering and said that Mary was at his house. Ross denied initially but eventually admitted the abuse. But he would return home without his wife. Now, Mary would go to stay with the Sayers. Thomas Sayer would later say that he arrived home to find Mary in the house, although they had never really met before. After being denied access to Mary, James returned the next day to the Sayers' hut and again asked to see Mary. This time she hid in one of the rooms, but when Ross returned a second time, she consented to speak to him. Ross asked Mary to come home with him, to which she replied, "No, you're a brute, Jem, to ask me to go home with you after using me the way that you have done." However, she did agree to speak to him again the following day. On March 8th, Ross again came to the Sayers' hut to speak to Mary, this time asking where his money and his pistols were. Mary said that she'd given them to Mr. Darlett. On March 9th, Ross came with his pocketbook to give Mary money. He commented to Elizabeth Sayer that she and Mr. Darlett were the reason his wife would not return home to him. Elizabeth replied, "Don't you say that. Your wife is quite a stranger and I have never seen her before this." Ross replied quite ominously that he owed it to them. Elizabeth went to fetch Mr. Darlett, but Ross had gone by the time they had returned. James Ross would not return for 4 days. Early on the morning of the 13th of March 1856, Thomas Sayer would leave around 6:30 a.m. heading for Burnt Creek with a load of timber. At the time, his wife Elizabeth and Mary with baby James were still in their beds asleep. Around 11 a.m, James Ross was seen entering the Sayers' hut by her sister Henrietta, who was working at the Darlett house. Jan, a Chinaman, who swore an oath by blowing out a lit candle, was shepherding in the stockyard near the Sayers' hut. When he passed the open door on his way to the dam to get a pannikin of water, Elizabeth called out to him, "Chinaman, come in, come in." It was then that Jan saw James Ross armed with a pistol. Elizabeth asked Jan to go get Mr. Darlett for assistance, but Ross threatened to shoot him if he did. Ross fired a shot at Elizabeth, who was standing just outside the door. She fell to the ground. Ross then produced a set of shearing blades and stabbed her in the neck and the back several times. He also hit her over the head with a shovel. He then grabbed her by the hand and dragged her body to the dam and threw her in. By the time Elizabeth's sister Henrietta had arrived on the scene and pulled her sister from the dam as much as she could so that her head and shoulders were out of the water, Elizabeth was just clinging to life, but quite insensible and bleeding profusely. Henrietta ran back to the main house for help. In the meantime, Jan returned to his own hut and Ross followed, demanding to know where Mary was. He threatened to shoot Jan, who already retaliated with a big stick, threatening to hit Ross back. Ross left and returned to the Sayers' hut, looking for Mary. Jan headed to the dip to find Mr. Darlot and tell him what was happening. Unfortunately for Mary, Ross found his wife hiding underneath the bed. He took the shearing blades and stabbed her numerous times in the head and upper body before leaving her for dead. He then found his own 15-month-old namesake and stabbed him to death. Some newspapers reported that he'd taken his son out of the bed and smashed his head against the wall. Ross then fled from the bloody scene. Mr. Darlot arrived and found Elizabeth Sayer in the dam quite dead in a pool of blood on the bank where Henrietta had half dragged her out. Mary was found in the hut almost dead in a large pool of blood with many stab wounds to the head and face. Baby James was found on one of the beds quite dead and bloodied. Darlot found the spade and the shearing blades on the ground outside the hut. He immediately sent for the doctor and the police and they started a search for the wanted man. To add to the tragedy, both Elizabeth Sayer and Mary Ross had both been pregnant.
For a fascinating look at life in a colonial prison, visit Geelong Jail Museum. Situated just over an hour from Melbourne in the heart of Geelong, it's Victoria's most intact and longest continually operating colonial prison. For information, search for Geelong Jail or call 1300 865 800.
2 days later, James Ross walked to the door of Hugh McLean's hut about 5 miles from the main homestead. He knelt in the doorway and asked if he would take in a murderer. Another man who'd been sitting at the table got up and went outside, and Ross asked if he'd gone to inform Mr. Darlot. Ross stated that he wished to give himself up and that they should tell the police he was there. McLean fed the wretched man before he convinced him to accompany him to the home station, and Ross agreed but said he was unable to walk. McLean and the other man agreed to assist him to walk the distance but first tied his hands behind his back, as the other man was quite nervous about being in the company of a murderer. Ross eventually convinced him that he was not a threat and his hands were untied. McLean asked Ross why he had committed the murders. Ross replied he had killed four, Mrs. Sayer, his son, his wife and her unborn child. Ross stated that he should go to hell for 5,000 years for what he had done, although he also stated that he wished he had set fire to Mr. Darlot's station. When asked why he had killed his own child, Ross responded with that it might not be an orphan in the world to be abused by anyone. He explained to McLean that he had offered to give his wife anything she wanted, offering to buy her a horse and cart or to take her to town. He'd promised to Mary that he would never ill-treat her again, but that Mary had refused. 3 or 4 miles down the road, the trio would come across Sergeant Henry Palmer, who would take charge of the prisoner. Palmer would handcuff Ross and caution him against saying anything, but offered to take down his statement if he so wished. Sergeant Palmer would ask Ross if he knew what he was being arrested for. Ross replied that he had killed 2 women. Palmer explained that Mary had not died, to which Ross expressed regret as she would then have been out of pain. James Ross was taken to the lockup in Horsham and asked the police whether he would be hanged there or somewhere else. Ross explained that he had tried to drown himself in the 2 days he was missing but was unsuccessful. He said he was 10 feet underneath the water before being pulled up. Ross also described Nellie being killed by a falling log near the Dawson's homestead. James Ross would be brought to Geelong to face trial for the willful murder of Elizabeth Sayer before Chief Justice Beckett of the Circuit Court on the 11th of April 1856. The case for the prosecution heard testimony from Thomas Sayer, the Chinaman Jan, Henrietta Page, James Darlot, Hugh McLean, William Moore and Dr. William Whitcomb, who had attended the deceased and the injured. Dr. Whitcomb testified to the extent of Elizabeth's injuries, which included 2 large wounds in her neck, a stab wound in her hip, a bruise on the back of her head, and a number of stab wounds in her back, which all were sufficient to have caused her death. The defence did not state any case. The Chief Justice said that it was impossible to bring a charge of manslaughter in this case, given the evidence of premeditation and nothing to prove that Ross was anything but sane. The jury did not even rise from the box before pronouncing that James Ross was guilty of the willful murder of Elizabeth Sayer. Judge Beckett asked Ross if he had any reason as to why the sentence of death should not be pronounced. Ross replied, no. Judge Beckett then donned the black cap and passed the sentence of death on Ross, saying, "Prisoner at the bar, you have been found guilty, and I must say, on the most undeniable testimony of one of the most atrocious and premeditated murders that has ever been my experience to have been brought to the notice of a jury. I am afraid that your demeanour and apparently perverted state of your nature, that any remarks on the enormity of your offence that I could offer will be lost upon you. Crimes of the nature of yours are generally attended with a degree of cruelty that is deplorable. But when men deviate far from the ordinary course of humanity and exercise what might be termed extraordinary brutality, as in your case there is some cause or excuse for doubting the soundness of their reasoning faculties. But in your case, there is nothing to suggest such an idea. Your manner of committing the crime and your remarks have shown that you acted in a systematic and reasoning manner. You have appeared to have formed the idea that your poor wife was faithless, an idea which everyone in court who has heard the evidence must know to have been utterly groundless. And you behaved towards her so brutally as to drive her from your home, under the impression that those who afforded her asylum from your abuse were endeavouring to prevent her from returning to you. You conceived the idea of being revenged on all, and the vindictive feeling which prompted you to take your wife's life has ended in the destruction of the poor woman of whose murder you have now been found guilty. Your wife has evidently afforded you no excuse for the excessive brutality and ferocity of the murders you have committed, but as I before said, I am afraid any further remarks of mine will be lost on a nature so perverted as yours. I must, however, exhort you to avail yourself on the short, the very brief, time that you will have left in this world to prepare for that eternity that you seem to have so vague an idea of. The sentence of this court is that you, James Ross, be taken hence to the place whence you came, and there, on such day as His Excellency shall appoint, be hanged by the neck until you are dead. And may the Lord have mercy on your soul."
You're listening to Locked Up With History.
The execution for James Ross was set down for April 22nd, 1856 at 8 a.m. at the Geelong Jail. Now, Ross was the first regional execution after the passing of the 1854 Execution of Criminals Act, which was passed on June 6, 1855. The Act abolished the previous public executions. Executions were now to be carried out within the walls or enclosed yards of jails. The sheriff or deputy sheriff, jailer, officers of the jail, including the medical officer, were to be present at every execution. Justices of the peace, ministers of religion, and police officers may attend if they desired. Military guards and members of the public were at the discretion of the sheriff. All attending must remain until the sentence had been carried out fully. The executed criminal must not be buried or removed within 8 hours of the execution to allow viewing of the body as ordered by Justice of the Peace. The inquest must be held as soon as convenient to show that the sentence had been carried out effectively. At the Geelong Jail, the execution of James Ross was carried out in a two-story wooden building that had been built to house an enclosed gallows on the north wall of the jail. The night before the execution, Ross took time to thank Governor Brodie and the sheriff, along with head turnkey Michael Smith, for the kindness that they had shown him since he was sentenced to death. He also thanked the Reverend Harnett and Reverend Goodman, the jail chaplain, for the pains they had taken since his sentencing. Ross had been impatient for his date of execution to arrive, as he no longer wanted to live. He spent the time waiting for his execution by reading the Bible and other devotional books. The night before, he requested writing materials and composed a long, rambling statement of his life and crimes, which was published in the newspapers of the day. He would be executed without much fanfare, and an inquest was held at 12 p.m. But what about victim Mary? Well, despite her injuries, Mary recovered, although she did lose the child that she was carrying. Mary married a man by the name of James Clearson 2 years after the execution of her husband, and the couple went on to have 6 children. And perhaps in the best way of surviving the tragedies and abuse that she had suffered at the hands of James Ross, Mary lived for another 40 years before she finally passed away in 1896.
Interested in learning more about this episode? Join the Locked Up With History Facebook group for more facts and discussions about the dark colonial past of Victoria and beyond.
Now, before we wrap up the story of James Ross, don't forget to check out our webpage at lockedupwithhistory.com.au, where you can find all of the previous episodes along with any photos or movies that we may have to go along with the episodes where we have them. And of course, you can listen to all of the episodes on your favourite podcast streaming platform. If you have any questions or would like to discuss any of the episodes, join us over on the Facebook or Locked Up With History group. And this way you can ask me any questions on the current or previous episodes. And again, you can see any of the media that we have associated with it. And if you have an idea for a podcast that you'd like me to investigate and to report back on, please send us a message and I'm more than happy to have a look. But on our next episode, we will be heading back to Chinatown in Melbourne, one of the oldest Chinatowns in the world, and the murder of Mary Lucas by her husband. The couple were quite prolific in the red light district of Melbourne in the 1850s. Until then, see you on the darker side of history.
More information on the story from today's episode, check out the show notes or join the Locked Up With History Facebook group. Remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.